The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Orson Welles stars on an episode of Suspense entitled The Hitchhiker, Jungle Jim is stalled on the trail, and Seabiscuit battles War Admiral in a race from 1938. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Jungle Jim is stalled on the trail, and Seabiscuit battles War Admiral in a race from 1938. Right now, Orson Welles stars in Suspense, with an episode from 1942 entitled The Hitchhiker, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The Columbia Network takes pleasure in bringing you Suspense. Suspense, Columbia's parade of outstanding thrillers, produced and directed by William Speer and scored by Bernard Herrmann. The notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles. I'm very happy I am to be back in the United States and back on the Columbia Network. Even for so short a visit as this one. Back with old friends like Johnny Dietz, who is tonight's director, and Bernard Herrmann. The Mercury Theater presented tonight's radio play for the first time last year. We came right out then and hailed it as a classic of the medium. Nobody argued the point. A lot of people asked us to do it again, so it's gratifying to get the chance now. And to find a favorite of ours in this distinguished anthology of spook shows. Personally, I've never met anybody who didn't like a good ghost story. But I know a lot of people who think there are a lot of people who don't like a good ghost story. For the benefit of these, at least, I go on record at the outset of this evening's entertainment with a sober assurance that although blood may be curdled on this program, none will be spilt. There's no shooting, knifing, throttling, axing, or poisoning here. No clanking chains, no cobwebs. No bony and or hairy hands appearing from secret panels or, better yet, bedroom curtains. If it's any part of that dear old phosphorescent foolishness that people who don't like ghost stories don't like, then again, I promise you, we haven't got it. Not tonight. What we do have is a thriller. It's half as good as we think it is. You can call it a shocker. It's already been called a real Orson Welles story. Now, frankly, I don't know what this means. I've been on the air directing and acting in my own shows for quite a while now, and I don't suppose I've done more than half a dozen thrillers in all that time. Honestly, I don't think even that many, but it seems I do have a reputation for the uncanny. Quite possibly, a little escapade of mine involving a couple of planets, which shall be nameless, is responsible. Doesn't really matter. Don't think I disapprove of thrillers. I don't. A story doesn't have to appeal to the heart. It can also appeal to the spine. Sometimes you want your heart to be warmed, and sometimes you want your spine to tingle. The tingling, it's to be hoped, will be quite audible as you listen tonight to The Hitchhiker. That's the name of our story, The Hitchhiker. auto camp on Route 66, just west of Gallup, New Mexico. If I tell it, perhaps it'll help me. Keep me from going crazy. I gotta tell this quickly. I'm not crazy now. I feel perfectly well, except that I'm running a slight temperature. My name is Ronald Adams. I'm 36 years of age, unmarried, tall, dark, with a black mustache. I drive a 1940 Buick, license number 6Y175189. I was born in Brooklyn. All this I know. I know that I'm at this moment perfectly sane. That it's not me who's gone mad. It's something else. Something utterly beyond my control. I've got to speak quickly. At any minute, the link may break. This may be the last thing I ever tell on Earth. The last night I ever see the stars. 6 days ago, I left Brooklyn to drive to California.
Goodbye, son. Good luck to you, my boy.
Goodbye, Mother. Here, give me a kiss, and I'll go.
I'll come out with you to the car.
Oh, no, it's raining. Stay here at the door. Hey, what's this? Tears? I thought you'd promised me you wouldn't cry.
Oh, I know, dear. I'm sorry. But I do hate to see
Mother,
you
go. I'll be back. It'll only be on the coast 3 months.
Oh, it isn't that. It's just the trip. Ronald, I wish you weren't driving.
Oh, Mother, there you go again. People do it every day.
I know, but you'll be careful, won't you? Promise me you'll be extra careful. Don't fall asleep or drive fast or pick up any strangers on the road.
Oh, gosh. I think I was still 17 here, you two.
Oh, and wire me as soon as you get to Hollywood, won't you, son?
Of course I will. Don't you worry. There's nothing going to happen. It's just 8 days of perfectly simple driving on smooth, decent, civilized roads with a hot dog or a hamburger stand every 10 miles. I was in fine spirits. The drive ahead of me, even the loneliness, seemed like a lark. I reckoned without him. Crossing Brooklyn Bridge that morning in the rain, I saw a man leaning against the cables. He seemed to be waiting for a lift. There were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. He was carrying a cheap overnight bag in one hand. He was thin, nondescript, with a cap pulled down over his eyes. I would have forgotten him completely, except that just an hour later, while crossing the Pulaski Skyway over the Jersey Flats, I saw him again. At least, he looked like the same person. He was standing now with one thumb pointing west. I couldn't figure out how he got there, but I thought probably one of those fast trucks had picked him up, beaten me to the Skyway, and let him off. I didn't stop for him. Then late that night, I saw him again. It's on the new Pennsylvania Turnpike between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh. It's 265 miles long with a very high speed limit. I was just slowing down for one of the tunnels when I saw him, standing under an arc light by the side of the road. I'd seen quite distinctly the bag, the cap, even the spots of fresh rain scattered over his shoulders. He hallooed at me this time.
Hello! Hello!
I stepped on the gas like a shot. That's lonely country for the Alleghenies, and I had no intention of stopping. Besides, the coincidences or whatever it was, gave it to Willie's. Stopped at the next gas station. Fill her up.
Certainly, sir. Check your oil, sir?
No, thanks.
Nice night, isn't it?
Yes. It hasn't been raining here recently, has it?
Not a drop of rain all week.
Oh? Oh, I suppose that doesn't done your business any harm.
Oh, people drive through here all kinds of weather. Mostly business, you know. There aren't many pleasure cars out on the turnpike this season of the year.
I suppose not. What What about hitchhikers?
Hitchhikers here?
What's the matter? Don't you ever see any?
Not much. If we did, it'd be a sight for sore eyes.
Why?
Oh, guy'd be a fool who started out to hitch rides on this road. Look at it.
Then, you've never seen anybody?
No. Maybe they get the lift before the turnpike starts. I mean, you know, just before the toll house. But then it'd be a mighty long ride. Most cars wouldn't want to pick up a guy for that long a ride. And you know, this is pretty lonesome country here. Mountains and woods. You ain't seen anybody like that, have you?
No. Oh, no, not at all. It's just a technical question.
I see. Well, that'll be just $1.49 with the tax.
Gradually passed through my mind a sheer coincidence. I had a good night's sleep in Pittsburgh. I didn't think about the man all next day until just outside of Zanesville, Ohio, I saw him again. It was a bright, sunshiny afternoon. The peaceful Ohio fields, brown with the autumn stubble, lay dreaming in the golden light. I was driving slowly, drinking it in, when the road suddenly ended in a detour. In front of the barrier, he was standing. Let me explain about his appearance before I go on. I repeat, there was nothing sinister about him. He was as drab as a mud fence, nor was his attitude menacing. He merely stood there, waiting, almost drooping a little, the cheap overnight bag in his hand. He looked as though he'd been waiting there for hours. Then he looked up. He hailed me. He started to walk forward.
Hello! Hello! Hello?
No, not just now, sorry.
Going to California?
No, not today. The other way, going to New York, sorry. After I got the car back on the road again, I felt like a fool. Yet the thought of picking him up, of having him sit beside me, was somehow unbearable. At the same time, I felt more than ever unspeakably alone. Hour after hour went by. Fields, the towns ticked off one by one. The light changed. I knew now that I was going to see him again. And though I dreaded the sight, I caught myself searching the side of the road, waiting for him to appear.
Yeah, what is it? What do you want?
You sell sandwiches and pop here, don't you?
Yeah, we do in the daytime. But we're closed up now for the night.
I know, but I was wondering if you could possibly have a cup of coffee, black coffee. Just...
No, not this time of night, mister. My wife's a cook. She's in bed.
Well, don't shut the door, please. Listen, just a minute ago... Just a minute ago, there was a man standing here right beside the stand, a suspicious-looking man. I don't mean to disturb it. You see, I was driving along when I just happened to look, and there he was.
How's he doing?
Well, nothing.
You've been taking a nip, that's what you've been doing. Now, on your way before I call out Scarabos.
I got into the car again and drove on slowly. I was beginning to hate the car. I could have found a place to stop, to rest a little. I was in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri now. A few resort places there were closed, only an occasional log cabin, seemingly deserted. That's all that broke the monotony of the wild, wooded landscape. I had seen him at that roadside stand. I knew I'd see him again. Maybe at the next turn of the road. I knew that when I saw him next, I would run him down. But I didn't see him again. I didn't see him until late next afternoon. I stopped a car at a sleepy little junction just across the border into Oklahoma to let a train pass by. when he appeared across the tracks, leaning against a telephone pole. Perfectly airless, dry day. The red clay of Oklahoma was baking under the southwestern sun. Yet there were spots of fresh rain on his shoulders. I couldn't stand that. Without thinking, blindly, I started the car across the tracks. He didn't even look up at me. He was staring at the ground. I stepped on the gas hard, veering the wheel sharply toward him. I could hear the train in the distance now, but I didn't care. And something went wrong with the car. The train was coming closer. I could hear its bell ringing and the cry of its whistle. Still, he stood there. And now I knew that he was beckoning me to my death. Frustrated him that time. The starter worked at last. I managed to back up. And the train passed, he was gone. I was all alone in the hot, dry afternoon. After that, I knew I had to do something. I didn't know who this man was or what he wanted of me. I only knew that from now on, I mustn't let myself alone on the road for 1 minute. Hello there. Like a ride?
Well, what do you think? How far are you going?
Where do you want to go?
Amarillo, Texas.
I'll drive you there.
Gee. You mind if I take off my shoes? My dogs are killing me.
Go right ahead.
Oh. Gee, what a break this is.
You hitchhike much?
Sure. Only it's tough sometimes in these great open spaces to get the break.
I should think it would be, though. I'll bet you get a good pickup in a fast car. If you did, you could get places faster than, say, another person in another car, couldn't you?
I don't get you.
Well, take me, for instance. Suppose I'm driving across the country, say, at a nice steady clip about 45 miles an hour. Couldn't a girl like you just standing beside the road waiting for Liz beat me to town? Or any town, provided she got picked up every time in a car doing from 65 to 70 miles an hour?
I don't know. What difference does it make?
Oh, no difference. It's just a crazy idea I had sitting here in the car.
Imagine spending your time in a swell car thinking of things like that.
What would you do instead?
What would I do? If I was a good-looking fella like yourself, why, I just enjoy myself every minute of the time. I'd sit back and relax. And if I saw a good-looking girl along the side of the road, hey, look out!
Did you see him?
See who?
A man standing beside the barbed wire fence.
I didn't see anybody. There wasn't nothing but a bunch of cows and a wire fence.
No?
What'd you think he was doing? Trying to run into the barbed wire.
There's a man there, I tell you. A thin gray man with an overnight bag in his hand. And I was trying to run him down.
Run him down? You mean kill him?
Say you didn't see him back there? You sure?
I didn't see a soul. As far as
that's concerned. Watch for him the next time and keep watching. Keep your eyes peeled on the road. He'll turn up again. Maybe any minute. There! Look there!
How does this door work? I'm getting out of here.
See him that time?
No, I didn't see him that time. And personally, mister, I don't expect never to see him. All I want to do is go on living. I don't see how I will very long driving with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me, but please don't go.
So if you'll excuse me...
You can't go. Listen, how would you like to go to California? I'll drive you to California.
Seeing pink elephants all the way? No, thanks. Thanks just the same.
Listen, please, just 1 minute, please.
You know what I think you need, big boy? Not a girlfriend. Just a good dose of sleep.
Please.
There. I got it now.
No, you can't go. Please, come
your
back.
Hands off me. Do you hear me? Leave your hands off me.
She ran from me. As though I were a monster few minutes later, I saw a passing truck pick her up. I knew then that I was utterly alone. It was in the heart of the great Texas prairies. There wasn't a car on the road after the truck went by. I tried to figure out what to do, how to get hold of myself. If I could find a place to rest, or even if I could sleep right here in the car for a few hours along the side of the road. I was getting my winter overcoat out of the back seat to use as a blanket when I saw him coming toward me, emerging from the herd of moving steer.
Hello!
Maybe I should have spoken to him then. Fought it out then and there. For now he began to be everywhere. Wherever I stopped, even for a moment, for gas, for oil, for a drink of pop, a cup of coffee, sandwich, he was there. I saw him standing outside the auto camp in Amarillo that night when I dared to slow down. He was sitting near the drinking fountain of a little camping spot just inside the border of New Mexico. He was waiting for me outside the Navajo reservation where I stopped to check my tires. I saw him in Albuquerque when I bought 20 gallons of gas. I was afraid to stop now. I began to drive faster and faster. I was in lunar landscape now. The great arid mesa country of New Mexico. I drove through it with the indifference of a fly crawling over the face of the moon. Now he didn't even wait for me to stop. Unless I drove at 85 miles an hour over those endless roads, he waited for me at every other mile. I'd see his figure, shadowless, flitting before me. Still in the same attitude, over the cold, lifeless ground. Flitting over dried-up rivers, over broken stones cast up by old glacial upheavals. Flitting in that pure and cloudless air. I was beside myself when I finally reached Gallup, New Mexico this morning. There's an auto camp here. Cold, almost deserted this time of year. I went inside and asked if there was a telephone. I had the feeling that if only I could speak to someone familiar, someone I loved, I could pull myself together.
Your call, please.
Long distance.
Long distance, certainly. This is long distance.
I'd like to put in a call to my home in Brooklyn, New York. I'm Ronald Adams. The number is Beechwood 200828.
Certainly. I will try to get it for you. Albuquerque. New York for Gallup.
New York.
Gallup, New Mexico, calling Beechwood 200828.
I'd read somewhere that love could banish demons. It's the middle of the morning. I knew Mother would be home. I pictured her tall and white-haired in her crisp house dress, going about her tasks. Be enough, I thought, just to hear the even calmness of her voice.
Will you please deposit $3.85 for the first 3 minutes? When you have deposited a dollar and a half, will you wait until I have collected the money? All right, deposit another dollar and a half. Will you please deposit the remaining 85 cents? Ready with Brooklyn. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Mrs. Adams' residence.
Hello, Mother.
This is Mrs. Adams' residence. Who is it you wish to speak to, please?
What? Who's this?
This is Mrs. Winnie.
Mrs. Winnie? I don't know any Mrs. Winnie. Is this Beechwood 208-828?
Yes.
Where's my mother? Where's Mrs. Adams?
Mrs. Adams is not at home. She's still in the hospital.
The hospital?
Yes. Who is this calling, please? Is it a member of the family?
What's she in the hospital for?
She's been prostrated for 5 days. Nervous breakdown. But who is this
nervous
calling?
Breakdown? Well, my mother never was nervous.
It's all taken place since the death of her oldest son, Ronald.
Death of her oldest son, Ronald? Hey, what's this? What number is this?
This is Beechwood 208-828. It's all been very sudden. He was killed just 6 days ago in an automobile accident on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir. Your 3 minutes are up, sir.
And so I'm sitting here in this deserted auto camp in Gallup, New Mexico. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to get hold of myself. Otherwise, I'm going to go crazy. Outside, it's night. The vast, soulless night of New Mexico. 1,000,000 stars are in the sky. Ahead of me stretch 1,000 miles of empty mesa. Mountains. Prairies. Desert. Somewhere among them, he's waiting for me. Somewhere I shall know who he is and who I am.
Ends The Hitchhiker, and to Orson Welles, our considerable thanks for his playing of the title role. Mr. Welles?
Help wanted. Men, women, and children. Nature of work, hard, monotonous, back-breaking labor. Hours, 75 a week minimum. Pay, few cents an hour. Added inducement, 2 meals a day, including several ounces of bad bread and a cup of thin soup. Don't delay. Apply at once. How'd you respond to a want ad like that, Mr. and Mrs. American working man and woman? You'd laugh, wouldn't you, and throw the paper in the trash basket. Dismiss the whole advertisement as some kind of a joke, but believe me, it's no joke. It's a simple statement of the working conditions that exist today in Nazi Germany and the conquered countries under Nazi rule. It's also an exact statement of the working conditions that'll be imposed on you and every member of your family if the Nazis win this war. You yourself personally can stop them from winning, as you know. You don't have to give up your well-paid job to do it. You needn't have to be a soldier or a sailor or an airman or a nurse or a war worker to ensure American victory. Uncle Sam doesn't ask plain, ordinary, hard-working citizens like you to give him anything. All he asks, all this he does ask very seriously and very urgently, is that you loan him 10 cents out of every dollar you make. That's all there is to it. Lend Uncle Sam a dime to win this war. And he'll pay you back with interest when he's won it. The easiest, most convenient way to lend him these dimes is to enroll in the payroll savings plan. Just tell your boss to deduct 10 cents from every dollar he pays you and lend it to Uncle Sam in your name. Sign up for this simple savings plan today, and when victory comes, you'll have war bonds in your pockets instead of Axis bonds on your wrists.
Suspense will be heard again 2 weeks from tonight. Next Wednesday night, September 9th, the Columbia Broadcasting System will present over many of these stations at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime an address by W. Averill Harriman, the United States Lend-Lease Administrator in London. Mr. Harriman, as the personal representative of the President of the United States, attended the Moscow conferences between Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin. Next Wednesday's broadcast will be Mr. Harriman's first public address since his return to this country. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. John Dietz was our guest director this evening. Tonight's radio drama was written by Lucille Fletcher. The original score was by Bernard Herrmann. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of Suspense starring Orson Welles, first broadcast on radio on February 9th, 1942. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, Seabiscuit battles War Admiral in a race from 1938. Right now, Jungle Jim is stalled on the trail on this program from 1936 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Presenting the adventures of Jungle Jim. Last week, Jungle Jim and Kola reached the Chalmers camp and found Lynn unconscious from a bullet wound, and her father gone. Quickly, they started out to look for the missionary. Meanwhile, the Reverend, as a prisoner of Mamba, is taken before the vampire Batwoman. He recognized her as Lily DeVril, or Shanghai Lil, as she was better known, a woman he had once tried to reform. The thrilling adventures of Jungle Jim are pictured each Sunday in the Comic Weekly, the world's greatest pictorial supplement of humor and adventure. The Comic Weekly, each page printed in full colors, is distributed everywhere as an integral part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. And now we continue the story. With his hands still tied behind him, the Reverend Chalmers stands in front of the bamboo table in the great hall of the plantation house. Behind it, his captors, the vampire Batwoman, Jacques Lebas, and Mamba, face him. The Batwoman is speaking.
I'm glad to see you, Reverend Chalmers.
I'm sure you'll forgive me if I say I don't believe you.
You're wrong. I hate you, Dr. Chalmers, but I'm glad to see you. This is the moment I've dreamed about, thought about, planned for some years. 10 of them were in that prison you had me sent to.
Yes, I had you arrested because you killed a man in jealous rage.
What? You kill a man, boss? My God.
After all my efforts to reforming you had failed, Lily DeVril.
Your efforts to reform me, Dr. Chalmers. Would singing hymns and praying have changed the condition under which I was forced to live? Not very much. What did you do about making my life any easier? Nothing.
I had first to change your outlook on life.
Well, you changed that, all right. While I was listening to you, the man I love turned to somebody else. But you didn't care about that. You didn't even try to find out why I killed him.
You killed him in jealous rage.
That's what you think. That's what you made the judge and jury think, and that was enough for you. Well, that's all past changing now. I've served my time. I've paid society 10 years of my life for that worthless rotter.
And now you've got another life to pay for, Shanghai Lil. My daughters.
What do you mean?
This black cutthroat of yours...
Oh, tongue belong you.
Shut up, Mamba. Go on, Reverend. What about your daughter?
This black cutthroat of yours shot her, knocked me senseless and dragged me away, leaving my daughter dying, or for all we know, already dead.
Let's hope she is dead. It'll be less trouble all around.
If Lynn is dead, Lily DeVril, you'll be punished for it.
You seem to forget you're in the jungle country, Reverend. There's no law here but what we make ourselves.
There's a divine law that says thou shalt not kill.
You never were able to prove all that stuff you told me when you tried to reform me. That's why you failed, if you want to know.
Have you no faith, Lily DeVril?
I've got plenty.
In what?
In things that have proved worth having faith in.
What, for instance?
Well, my gun.
Oh, your gun.
It's never jammed or failed me when I've needed it. And in Laba and Mamba here, they've never failed me when I've trusted them to obey my orders.
Like Shaki Laba, loyal to you, boss.
Mamba do like you tell, Missy.
I know that, boy.
I hear he, boss, trying for to make you repent for what you do, huh?
Gotta hand it to you, Dr. Chalmers. Here you stand at my mercy, and you have a nerve enough to try to reform me all over again.
The Lord bids me fight the good fight in his name. Some victories are harder than others, but I must press on the fight as long as we both shall live.
That missionaire talk too much, boss. Why you no let me reform him? Maybe gentle Jacques Laba make him do little repenting for what he do to you, boss.
Laba is right. You're talking too much. Why I stand here and listen to you, I don't know. I swore I'd have my revenge for what you did to me, and by heaven, I will.
That's the way to speak up, boss.
I'm going to make you crawl. Do you hear me, you oily-tongued hymn singer? I'm going to make you crawl at the feet of Shanghai Lil.
At that moment, Jungle Jim, Lynn Chalmers, and Kolo stand rooted to the ground by a blood-curdling scream.
What's that, Jim?
Sounds like a puma. A female puma whose little one is lost. I've only met one in that state once before, and I might say we're in a tough spot.
I didn't think the animals bothered you in the daytime.
Well, Mrs. Puma doesn't stop for conventions or formalities when her baby has disappeared. Kolo, push ahead to the first clear place you see.
All right, Quan Jim.
Oh, what are we going to do, Jim?
Well, I don't want Mrs. Puma to drop down on us from one of those trees unexpectedly. It'll be healthier if there's plenty of room around us.
Jim, now two wildcats.
Oh, Jim.
Oh, now, don't worry, Lynn. We'll get past them somehow. Kolo, do you see an open place ahead there?
Yes, it's one. Plenty soon.
Good. Now, you stick right close to me, Lynn.
You think I won't? I'm going to be like your shadow.
One, Jim.
Huh? What is it, Kolo?
Animal in open place.
What?
Two animals walk round and round. One look into eyes belong other.
Good.
What's good about it, Jim?
Why, there's going to be a fight. That means there'll only be one of them left to bother us, if there is one left. And after the fight, we'll be plenty tired.
Oh, have we got to stay here while they fight? Oh, we must get along and find Father. We can't waste time like this.
Lynn, this being your first trip down here excuses a remark like that.
Why?
Well, you see, the wind is blowing towards us at the present. Now, if we try to get around the cats, the wind would blow our scent to them, and like as not, both would turn on us.
Oh, I see.
Now, Lynn, follow me carefully. Kolo, you stay in the back with the luggage.
Yes, it's one.
We're sticking here until this thing is settled.
While back at the plantation house, Shanghai Lil disposes of her prisoner.
Laba.
Oui, boss.
Take the Reverend to our guest house.
The guest house. That one good joke, boss. Take the Reverend to our guest house. By God, I do that. Come along, Padre. Mamba, you go get ready for our guest.
All right, Mamba, go.
Make yourself as comfortable as you can, Dr. Chalmers.
The Lord is my comfort. And my salvation.
You'll need plenty where you're going.
Yeah, what that boss woman. She's one clever woman, Padre.
Is she?
You'll find out, by God. Nobody ever put anything over on her. Or me, Jacques Laba.
Really? I say, Laba. Whereabouts are we? This place, I mean.
What you care? You know going to send picture postcard?
Laba. How long have you been with Lily DeVril?
Well, I've been with her for... Hey, you ask too many questions, Padre.
Here we are at the guest house.
This hut?
Underneath this hut, Padre. Open the door, Mamba. Go on in. Lift up that door, Mamba. Now, Padre, get down those stairs.
Well, I suppose there's nothing to do but to obey.
You'll be plenty warm, Padre, but there's one window down there. By God, I hope you like the view.
Back in the jungle clearing, the two wild cats are at it, tooth and claw.
Wow! Look at that Puma snap, will you?
I'm terribly frightened, Jim. I wish they'd stop and go away so we can hurry after Dad.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lynn, but we can't budge from this spot until one or both of these animals is killed.
Look, look. One animal hurt bad now, Swan.
Yes? That was in the death grapple, all right. Wow, look at that.
Oh, this is terrible. Will it never end?
Not until one of the other gets killed.
Look, look. Animal died, Swansea.
Yes, sir. It won't be long now. Just about one more lunge and... What'd I tell you? See? The victor is making sure he's made a good job of it. And here's the moment I've been waiting for.
You're going to shoot him?
I'm going to do my darndest. Just let me get a bead on that lad.
Animal, jump up in air. Drop down. No more move, son.
Yes, Colo, I think I got him.
Oh, Jim, with one shot. Oh, you're marvelous.
Well, I had to make that shot, Count Lynn. That boy had a taste of blood, and he was fighting mad, remember? Come on now. Let's hit the trail again.
Oh, let's hurry. I hope nothing else prevents us from catching up to Dad.
Meanwhile, back at the plantation house, Shanghai Lil is interested in the throbbing drums.
Labar, where are you?
Labar, here, boss.
We've got some news. Come here.
That Jungle Jim, she not dead.
No worse luck, but it's about Jungle Jim.
We, boss?
He and his native boy are on their way up here.
My God, that good. I want for to see that fella.
And they got Talma's daughter with him.
What?
Mamba's aim wasn't so good.
Padre know this, boss?
You think I'm a fool? What he doesn't know will hurt him. I want him to brood over the fate of that brat of his until he goes mad.
He gone for to have plenty time to do that before he come out of the guest house.
Those drums are sending orders to my scouts along the trail. If any of them catch sight of Jungle Jim and his companions, they have been told what to do.
What further adventures are in store for Jungle Jim and Lynn Chalmers before they reach the plantation where Shanghai Lil is holding the missionary prisoner? What devilish plan has the Batwoman devised to torture the Reverend Chalmers before aid can reach him? In the Comic Weekly next Sunday, you will find in full color action pictures many of the scenes portrayed in today's dramatization. And you will also find many other famous characters of the world of pictures. In addition to Jungle Jim, there is Slips and Casper, Barney Google, The Little King, Captain Jammer Kids, Flash Gordon, and many, many others. There is also a new group of colored poster stamps to add to your collection. Those wonderful large-sized colored picture stamps showing many famous scenes and historic people. And don't forget our date at the same time next week for a continuation of the adventures of Jungle Jim.
Just below us, we've noted in the 10-box square that opens onto the track, the winner's circle, a few of the judges and officials, a single table clothed in white, and on it, a huge blanket of green with yellow chrysanthemums in it, and beside it, a tall, sparkling silver trophy for the winner this afternoon.
And they're off, and this is a go. And Georgie Wolf is at the whip on Seabiscuit to keep him up. And they're coming to me head and head. War Admiral on the inside. Wolf is driving Seabiscuit, and Seabiscuit is outrunning him. Seabiscuit is coming to me. One length, two lengths in the lead. And he came right over two lengths. He goes by me. Seabiscuit by two lengths. War Admiral right on his heels. Kutzinger sitting still and biding his time. Now it's a matter of making Seabiscuit set his own pace. War Admiral is trailing him around the turn. Seabiscuit carried him a little bit wide there. They're going halfway around that turn. Seabiscuit on the lead by two lengths. War Admiral is second to him. And Kurtzinger sitting still. Now War Admiral's trying to move to him. They're going into the backstretch. Seabiscuit by a length and a half. Now Seabiscuit by two lengths. War Admiral second. Seabiscuit by two lengths. They've got three quarters of a mile to come. And it's Seabiscuit by a length and a half down the backstretch. They're halfway down that backstretch. And there goes War Admiral after him. Now the horse race is on. And I'm losing them there. They're head and head. But I'll catch them here in just another 50 yards. They're head and head. And now War Admiral has a head advantage. And Seabiscuit's got a head advantage. They're going into that far turn. Head and head. And it is either one. Take your choice. And right there, they're coming into view now. And the head and head Seabiscuit on the inside. By a neck. With War Admiral second. That big throng dashing across the track, or across the infield there, coming for this fence. They've come into the stretch here in just a second, and they're head and head as they head for that home lane. Watch for them now as they turn into the stretch. Head and head, both horses under a drive. This is a real horse race, just what we hoped we'd get. They're head and head, and both jockeys driving. It's the best horse from here in. They've got 200 yards to come. It's horse against horse. Both of them driving. Seabiscuit leads by a length. Now Seabiscuit by a length and a half. Wolf has put away his whip. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit is the winner by four lengths. And you never saw such a wild crowd. Seabiscuit the winner by four lengths. Trying to drown this crowd out here. They're roaring around me. Seabiscuit was the winner from end to end. By four lengths.
Good evening. This is Bill Stern with today's late sports headlines brought to you by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, whose gay and gorgeous Technicolor musical anchors away, as all New York whistling its hit songs and singing its praises. The critics and public alike have given three cheers for Frank Sinatra, Catherine Grayson, Gene Kelly, and Jose Turby in Anchors Away. The New York Post says, Anchors Away is the best as well as the biggest musical romance of the year. And Time magazine advises that it's the pleasantest couple of hours that can be bought. You'll agree that Anchors Away tops the pick of the pictures after you've seen it, and you can see it right now, along with Paul Whiteman and his orchestra and Johnny Johnston in person at the Cool Capitol Theater, Broadway and 51st Street. Now for the sports spotlight. Tonight's baseball headline, the Yankees and the Dodgers win, the Giants lose. The New York Yankees made it two straight for the recently returned manager Joe McCarthy as they downed the Cleveland Indians 10-4. Alan Gettle was the winning pitcher, while Allie Reynolds was the loser. The Boston Red Sox shut out the Detroit Tigers 9-0, as Randy Heflin finally won a major league ball game, turning in a neat four-hitter. He had previously lost five straight. Chicago White Sox thwarted the bid of the Washington Senators for a tie for the tie of the league lead, and they beat the Senators 6-3. Tonight, the Philadelphia Athletics will play a twin bill at St. Louis. Over in the National League, the Brooklyn Dodgers defeated the Cincinnati Reds 9-4 to make it a clean sweep of the series. The Boston Braves nosed out the Chicago Cubs 2-1 behind the three-hit pitching of Al Javery. A home run by Tommy Holmes in the seventh inning was the winning margin. St. Louis Cardinals picked up a full game on the league-leading Cubs by downing the New York Giants 5-2 as Charlie Barrett won his 16th game of the season. Tonight's Pittsburgh Flyers play a doubleheader at Philadelphia. Turning to racing, the largest daily double of the New York season was hung up at Belmont Park this afternoon. If you had been lucky enough to have the right $2 bet on that daily double, your $2 would have gotten you back $1,490. And speaking of racing, the $25,000 Travers Stakes will be run at Belmont tomorrow afternoon. That'll be for the leading three-year-olds of the season. This will bring together Pavo, Wildlife. Each colt, incidentally, has defeated the other one once in the two previous meetings. Other entries include Burning Dream, Plebiscite, Adonis, and Jeep. A complete description of the race will be brought to you over this station beginning at 4:15 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. And speaking of things that will be brought to you tomorrow afternoon, in the world of tennis, champion Pauline Betts entered the semifinals of the Women's Eastern Grass Court Championships today by beating Mrs. Patricia Canning Todd, 6-love, 6-2. Margaret Osborne also made her way into the semifinals by beating Mary Arnold, 6-4, 6-3. In the men's division, Sidney Wood provided the first upset of the tournament. It was quite an upset by outlasting the second-seeded Gardner Malloy, 3-6, 7-5, and 6-4. I said that would be coming your way tomorrow afternoon. It will. We'll be out at the Westchester Country Club where these matches are taking place. And we'll bring you a description over this same station tomorrow afternoon at either 2:30 or 4:30. Take your choice, or perhaps you'll be with us both times. Well, the big news story today is what possibility there is of a Jap surrender, how close, when it might come. And, of course, that will have a very definite effect on sports when and if it does come. Baseball, football, tennis, golf, every sport will immediately start to get back many of the stars that have been lost to the armed services. It'll be the shot in the arm that sports has been waiting for since the war began. But even more important than what it will do for sports is what it's going to do for this country in general. It's going to mean that the boys are coming back, that those that are back stay here, and to everyone in the sports fold, it means a reunion of great sports stars with their buddies they left behind, and it looks like pleasanter days are ahead for all of us in the sports field. And that's the sports story for tonight. Take a tip from every critic in town. Be sure to see MGM's latest Technicolor hit, Anchors Away. The Times calls it another humdinger from MGM, and the Mirror says it's both delightful and swoonful. The Sun says it's a movie musical comedy at its gayest and its best. You'll make with a 21-gun salute after you've seen Frankie Sinatra, Catherine Grayson, Gene Kelly, and Jose Turby in Anchors Away. It's now playing at the Cool Capitol Theater, and on the stage is Paul Whiteman and his orchestra and the popular singer Johnny Johnston, all at the Capitol Theater. Bill Stern reminding you and hoping you have a pleasant weekend, reminding you to tune in same station tomorrow night for another session of MGM Sports Time. Until then, good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring an MGM Sports Report with Bill Stern, originally broadcast on NBC network station WEAF on August 10th, 1945. We also heard Seabiscuit battle War Admiral from November 1st, 1938, and an episode of Jungle Jim, first broadcast on radio on January 4th, 1936. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.